Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome again to another episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. We are approaching weekend 10 of this year 2018. I'm Dirk, I'm your host, and I thank you very much for tuning in again. I enjoy our growing listenership. Thank you, and please feel free to communicate our podcast and what we are doing, what we're trying to do with our online platform, lakelifeweekend.com. You are always updated about news and events in the area and some highlights, some hidden gems, and all those things. Feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com to give us your ideas of what to communicate, what to speak about, or anything. Any kind of feedback is much appreciated. We have today with us in our interview part Tim Egebrogen from Detroit Lakes, former police chief and the singing cop. Please stay tuned for this. And also, we would like to thank again our sponsor here from Frazee. It's At Ease Dock and Lift on Highway 10, leaving Detroit Lakes, going towards Perham, right after the first Frazee exit there. They built a new facility just last year, and they're equipped with everything you need to enjoy the open waters, docks and lifts, even pedal boards. Sometimes they have a used boat on site, so it's a little outfit that grew to more than little. Please go in, ask for John or Mike, and have them help you with your lake life fun this season. Yeah, thanks for this. And then go again to our website, please, lakelifeweekend.com. We have a lot happening again. I know there was another little snowdrop here the beginning of this week, and I know we all have spring fever, but it's coming. We all know it. And now I don't want to keep this any longer from our interview with Tim Egebrogen. Stay tuned and enjoy this podcast. Have a wonderful weekend ahead. Yeah, welcome to our interview part. I'm sitting here with Tim Egebrogen. Hello, Tim.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much for coming. Tim was the chief of police in Detroit Lakes and finished his police career, I think, a year ago, and yep. Now became a musician, or continued his passion as a musician. And yeah, we want to talk about both. But before we speak about law enforcement and then music, tell us a little bit more about yourself. Where are you from? Are you from Lakes Country originally?
I am not. I'm from Fisher, Minnesota originally. It's the center of the universe. And
Oh, it is?
No. So it's just right between Crookston, Minnesota and Grand Forks, North Dakota. And so very flat, no trees, rivers, and beet fields, and a beautiful area. But so I grew up there and went to Morehead State University after that, and married my high school sweetheart. And we had never really had any intentions of living in Detroit Lakes. I actually hadn't even been into Detroit Lakes other than my parents had a cabin in Bemidji, Minnesota. And so we would come through on Highway 10 and we would hit Highway 34. And that was my knowledge of Detroit Lakes, just that Highway 10 to 34. And when I graduated from Morehead State in 1989, I started applying for jobs, and I was working as a correctional officer in Morehead at the time and in the Clay County Jail. And so I just started applying, and I wanted a town of 30,000 or more. I wanted a bigger town that I thought I would work in. So I picked like the Minneapolis and the Mankato's and Grand Forks Police Department and all these different agencies, and I just applied everywhere, literally.
Sure.
And Detroit Lakes had an opening, so I took the test. I didn't know much about it, and so I thought, well, I'll just take the test for the testing experience. And I got an interview, and Walt Tollefson was the chief of police at the time, and so I had several interviews and ended up getting a job offer. And Chief Tollefson and Captain Ed Schmidt sat down with me and they said, well, it's a pretty good chance you'll retire here. You know, if you start working here, you're going to retire here. You're going to love it. And I just smiled and said, you bet. And I had no intentions of staying. I honestly didn't. I thought I would work a year or two and get some experience and then move on to Morehead Police Department was my dream job. I knew all the guys there, and that was my dream job. And shortly after I started working in Detroit Lakes, like 2 weeks after, I got a job offer from Mankato, and I got a job offer from Grand Forks Police Department. And I put both of those on the back burner, and I said, you know, let me try Detroit Lakes here for a year or two. And
that was when, in 1990?
1992.
Okay.
Yep. So 89 I graduated, and I went to school after that too, and worked at the jail. And so in 1991 I started applying, and 1992 then I got the job offer and in Detroit Lakes, and turned down Grand Forks and Mankato. And it was literally, we were renting a house kind of by Holiday gas station, and it was literally about 2 months into living here that I started July 1st of 1992. And it was busy. July, the 4th of July was crazy at that time. And still just, I mean, tens of thousands of people came to town. And it took us 3 hours to drive from County Road 6 and Westlake Drive up to Washington Avenue and Highway 10. And it was solid traffic, and it was crazy, and it was fun. And for a new cop starting out, it was amazing. I mean, I was in a high-speed pursuit my third day on the job, and so all these things going on, and it was fun. And about 2 months into it, we realized we were home, and so we bought our first home, the house we still live in.
Really,
we bought that in December of 1992, and we just absolutely fell in love with the lake, the 412 lakes within 25 miles, and. Because growing up in Fisher, the closest lake was Mentor, the lake over there. Can't even think of the name right now, but for dumb. But so that was our closest lake, and it was a half an hour away, and everybody went to that lake, and it was crazy, and it was just the way it was. But even today now, 25 years later, we still, when we're coming into town from wherever it is we're coming from, we will drive into town and go by the lake. Just because it just has that captivating feel, and it's what brought us here, and it's what's keeping us here, and then the people, you know, all the activities, the community center, the mountain now, all these things. For a small community of 9,000 people, we pack a huge punch. I mean, it's so amazing when the community decides something's going to happen. It's just a grassroots effort. This ice palace that we're working on now, you know, things like that keep us engaged in the community. We absolutely fell in love with it. So,
you love lake life.
Love it, absolutely. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's a beautiful, and it's true. And it's what I had many opportunities through my 25 years in Detroit Lakes. A lot of opportunities to go to other communities. And I always said if something happened in Detroit Lakes where I lost my job or they were cutting back or whatever, a place like Alexandria or Brainerd or Bemidji, you know, somewhere where there was water, and we've experimented a lot just like hanging out in these other communities too, but each one has its advantages and disadvantages. But Detroit Lakes, with its location, we go to the Twin Cities area once in a while for events or whatever. We're not too far for that. The Fargo-Moorhead area is close. We have all these lakes right here with us. And as a police officer, it had everything that I wanted as a police officer. It had...
Explain that.
Yep. So like why I wanted a bigger community, like 30,000 people, I wanted enough activity to keep occupied, you know, to keep... The reasons I wanted to be a police officer, I wanted to help people, I wanted to be busy and do police work.
Uh-huh.
And if I was in a small community that you know, we only had a few calls a year, I wouldn't have liked that, I don't think. And so I think per capita, you know, pound for pound, a community like Detroit Lakes and Becker County were just as busy as the bigger agencies, you know, and just it's just prorated, basically. And so in my 25 years, I got to investigate homicides. You know, I got to investigate, I say got to, you know, because I was, I had the opportunity to. But I mean, there was everything from the mental health issues to suicides to homicides, sexual assaults, you know, the stuff that I really felt like I could make a difference. You know, I went through everywhere in my career. I did everything in the police department except for the school resource officer. That was the only position I never had. I did investigations. I had a police dog for 7 years. And you know, so I did all these things, and it was fascinating. And the last 5.5 years of my career, I was the chief of police. And so that was, it was just...
That's when I met you.
Yes,
but exactly. In a good way.
Yeah. No, that 4th of July when I chased you down the street.
Yeah.
And I used every phrase I knew from Hogan's Heroes. Jawohl, Herr Kommandant. Sprechen die Deutsch nein.
No, that is just... No, it's not true.
No, it's not. But it's...
But yeah, keep going.
Yeah, so it was an exciting career, and it was everything I dreamed of. The community was very supportive of law enforcement, even.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, still very much so, and even in the years where the national feel toward law enforcement felt like it was not so supportive, we knew that was just a minority of people. It wasn't most people that felt that way about police. It was just a few very vocal people, and we needed to pay attention to those voices too. We need to evaluate what we were doing as law enforcement, as a community, as the entire community. So being the chief of police, I was involved with the at the state level in the Chiefs of Police Association. So we had a lot of conversations. You know, as a smaller town chief, I was shoulder to shoulder with a lot of the metro police chiefs, and we realized that a lot of the issues they were dealing with were same issues that we were dealing with on the different scale. And so we just learned a lot about that whole thing, and I even got a little taste of the national level, meeting chiefs and sheriffs from some of these national big headline cases. And and it was fascinating, you know. And what I saw when I found in law enforcement, that as a law enforcement community, is that sure, there are bad apples, like in any industry, in any business. There were people that had no right wearing a badge, you know, that were a disgrace, and those people we dealt with, and we rooted them out. And
a cleaning process, an internal cleaning process.
Yep, exactly. And that's what every company does. No matter what kind of entity you have, it's a lot like a family. Even I mean, in your own family structure, you discipline your children. You have rules and regulations for your children, not because you're the power, but because you want to keep them safe. And so you say, well, you have a curfew, you know, you have to be in, you know, as a family. And so as a community, you just branch that out a little bit farther, and it's the same principle. We have the rules in our society, not because to be oppressive and to say you can't do that because we said so. We have speeding, you know, speed limits because we know that people that drive fast have a higher tendency to crash.
Yeah.
We have rules that say you should wear your seatbelt because we know that people involved in a crash are safer that way. And so when you look at it from that perspective, and that was a constant challenge for me in law enforcement, was to keep putting that into perspective, that this is why we have the rules. There's a legislature that sets the rules. And then within our own department, we have policies and procedures, and for the same reason, my officers, I, I loved them and I trusted them with my life, literally. And I had the ultimate respect for those officers. And when I retired at the age of 50, which a lot of people say, oh, that's so young. And in Minnesota, we have the option to start drawing our pension at age 50. And if I would have gone to 55, I would have gotten more of a pension back. And so I took a penalty at leaving at age 50. But to me, it was just an opportunity to take another step in a different direction. And so it wasn't. I left kind of like Michael Jordan, at the top of my game. I had a great staff. I cannot say enough about the men and women in our whole law enforcement community there. The Detroit Lakes Police Department is served still by proud men and women that have a burdensome job to do, but they do it in a caring, compassionate way, and our emotions are there, you know, and good, bad, or otherwise, our emotions are there. But so when I left, it was just there was other opportunities that I'd worked for, and it was just time to shift gears and to do more. So I've been entertaining as a one-man band doing music for about 15 years. And
before we speak about that's mainly why you're here. I'm just curious. A couple of police things. While I have you here, it seems to be sometimes that the system, I don't know how much you know about the European police organization, I guess, or the German is the most that I know. Is the chief of police, is that a part of the city? Like, you guys are actually employed by the city, and is the mayor overseeing you as an employee?
In Detroit Lakes, the mayor is the one who the chief would respond to or answer to. The city administrator is also part of that. So it's a little complicated. In the hierarchy, the mayor would be the ultimate, but the mayor in Detroit Lakes is kind of a part-time job. So Mayor Brank isn't in the office every day, where Mr. Clem is in the office every day. And so we coordinate with the city administrator and work with the city administrator. If there's any discipline issues that on the chief's, you know, that the if the chief of police messes up and does something inappropriate or wrong, and the mayor hears about it, then the mayor would have the ultimate authority, but the mayor would work with the city administrator in coming to a resolution.
That is so awkward to me because I firmly believe, I have to research that again, that in Germany it's totally independent. Like the executive, because you are the executive of the legislative.
Yep.
And no mayor can... Like, they could interfere. They could fire you or threaten you. That's what I see those old movies or whatever, where actually some politician can actually interfere law enforcement because he, in the back room, he tells you, hey, if you don't cover that up, you're fired.
Right.
But theoretically.
Yeah, and that could happen.
Is that a fear?
That could happen, but then the mayor would ultimately, you know, have to answer to the public because we work... Ultimately, our boss is the city of Detroit Lakes, the citizens.
True.
That's who our boss is. So if the citizens say, you know, we really want to have beer on the beach and we want to have no speed limits and just forget the rules, if that's what the citizens cry for and they go to their elected officials and the elected officials say, we're going to get rid of all of that, all of these rules, and then the city police department then would respond to that. But then my responsibility as the chief was to bring in facts. Okay, well, I understand that there's a group of people that want to allow beer on the beach. You know, let's just have bars on the beach, and that's fine. And then my responsibility then is to say, okay, I know what you're saying, but let's go back to 1992. When it was crazy busy, and you know, and we're not talking about the 40-year-old person who is sitting on the beach enjoying a cold beer watching their family play in the sand. That's the image that a lot of people have, but what may happen if we just allowed it is the 19, 20, 21-year-olds playing beer pong on the beach and getting loud and swearing and
speculation.
It's total speculation.
Because in Europe, with 16, I can drink legally, yep. And I can drink in public. It's unreal. I would never not be able. I can walk with a beer, and you have a beer in the subway, and like it's almost embarrassing when the kids. when I was 16, I had a beer in the subway or on the bus, but it's like now you just wouldn't do it. It looks awful because nobody does it.
Yeah.
So the actually society cleans this up itself. So right. I'm actually surprised that certain when we in the U.S. say like government, like it's always this like government is bad, which is not true because right. we are government actually, yep. like you just described. But if we there's certain things that we don't allow either and we accept it, which I would like to have a beer on the beach because I can. And if there's 17 kids of 22 having, this is a free country too, you know,
right.
like if they want to have beer pong and they don't harass me, like okay, let's they will do that once,
right?
Twice, and then that's over with.
Yeah.
Anyways, so but it's interesting, we could I think go for long for that, but,
right? That was just an example of mm-hmm. of how the system works, and you know, and if the citizens said, you know, then they would have to go to the city council, and then the city council then of the elected officials, and that's just the city government. Now the sheriff's office is a different. The sheriff is elected by the people.
Directly, correct?
Yes, yeah, the people elect him. We're in this, the chief of police is appointed by a civil service commission. And so when Chief Todd, for example, our current chief of police, when we started mm-hmm. a search for that chief of police, they opened it up and they, you know, had applications and everything. And when I was appointed chief of police also, I submitted my resume and we did interviews and stuff like that. So it's a little bit different in that respect, you know, and Sheriff Glander, you know, was elected by the people.
Does he have jurisdiction in the city? The sheriff also in the
yes.
city?
Yes. Yep. The
so
sheriff by yeah, the sheriff by statute is the chief law enforcement officer of the entire county.
Including
the city.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So, you know, we've always had a really good working relationship with the sheriff. That
why is that two? Two
well,
different.
Yeah. So the chief of police runs the city police department, and if there was an emergency, if a train derailed, for example, within the city limits of Detroit Lakes, ultimately the sheriff would be, by law, in command. But we work together.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I've never seen a situation where the sheriff has come in and kicked the chief out and said, you know, this is my deal. You know, it's
like in a movie.
Yeah, like in the movies. Yep. This is the FBI. They don't do that. And it's we've always had such a really good relationship with the State Patrol.
Is the FBI here?
Well, in Minneapolis and Fargo.
Fargo,
the FBI. We've worked with the FBI and we work quite a bit with like the Secret Service with the mostly like fake money. So we contact the Secret Service for that, and you know, in the
tell
state
us the biggest like the before we now talk music mm-hmm. and things. Is there like the biggest case or the most like challenging or like the most something like big that
it's,
nobody knows or like that's I don't know. I don't know.
You know, and everybody would know about like the big cases, but what's interesting is as the years progress, what's more challenging for law enforcement is the computer technology crimes and. They're very hard to investigate and very hard to prove, and a lot of times they're coming from another country, and so we're involving all these different things. So, you know, we had a lot of people say, well, it's Detroit Lakes, I'm surprised that you wear bulletproof vests, you know, and comments like that, and it's... You don't have to look too far to see police officers that have been involved in shootings. And, you know, Becker County has had several in the last few years, and where our own Becker County deputies have been involved with shootings. And so, I mean, it's real, and the threat is real, and we would rather have a, you know, err on the side of caution for our own lives and safety and stuff. But so... You know, we have the same in Detroit Lakes. We have the same drug problems that they do in the big cities. And
really,
it's, you know, the drugs that are available here are available wherever else. And even in Little Fisher, Minnesota, a town of 400 people, there are problems, you know, and they're real. And it's, you know, it's not the degree at how bad they are is all subjective, you know, or some people may say, oh, it's horrible. And the good news is that most people are in bed by 10:30 at night, and they watch the evening news and they go to bed. And but there's a life after 10:30 p.m. that luckily and thankfully a lot of people aren't familiar with. And each traffic stop that even one of our local officers makes is we call it an unknown threat. We don't call it a routine traffic stop, you know, but we treat each traffic stop as an unknown threat because you just don't know.
I think that's terrible. That's sad.
Yeah.
Because I'm not used to that.
Yeah.
Like, I always feel I'm the threat to the policeman.
But you know who you are, but we don't know who you are.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah. But that's so sad because like then I'm really becoming a potential threat as the one that, I mean, yeah, maybe I was a little fast or maybe my light is out in the back, but then I'm threatened again. It spirals up.
Right.
It's so sad because then I'm the potential threat. So the police officer is protecting or defending himself or herself. And then all of a sudden there's a hand by a gun and I'm like, oh, you know, seriously, because I don't have a gun in my car. I mean,
yeah, because you don't feel like, you don't feel like you're a criminal. And yeah, so I know exactly what you're saying. And that's just part of it. And our officers, for the vast majority of the traffic stops, are professional and courteous. Even when, like nowadays, it's not uncommon for somebody in the car to take out their cell phone and point it right at the police officer. And I'm recording you, and that's fine. That's your right. But, you know, and so then that right away, the officer's thinking, okay, you know, I mean, what could have been a simple traffic stop for speeding or a headlight out or whatever, the simple, if the person getting pulled over, you know, just does common sense things and keeps their hand on the steering wheel and you know, we don't require yes sir, no sir. And when I was working, I didn't expect yes sir, no sir, but I certainly didn't expect, you know, swearing and derogatory names like pig and, you know, and so when you hear that, and it happens, and it's, so when you hear that, then it's kind of like, okay, well, what happened is just a innocent, simple traffic stop now is getting escalated. And people say, well, you're a professional, you should just take that. Well, that's true. We're also still human, and so human emotions are going to get kicked in. And so that's what we strive and we train and we practice and we really work on all of that to make sure that it's not building up. And the police officer that's pulling you over may be going through a divorce. Their parents may have just passed away. Their kids
have a private life themselves.
Yep. Their child may have been diagnosed with a horrible disease. So they have a private life. And as much as we'd like to be a machine and compartmentalize all of that and approach this traffic stop as what it is, it's just a headlight out. And you get up to the car and you're responded by, what is it now, officer? Don't you have anything better to do? Well, then right away, all of that personal stuff that you're dealing with as a human, and it boils up, and sometimes it can spill over, and sometimes our mouth can get us into trouble, and we can shoot right back with our mouth and say, you know, well, nope, I don't have anything better to do. You might as well settle in, because for the next 15 minutes, we're going to give you a vehicle inspection or whatever. And it's not right, and I'm not suggesting that that's what happens.
Yeah, I get it.
But it's human, and we train for all of that, and it's challenging. But on the flip side, on the positive side of that whole thing, it's a very rewarding career when we can, once in a while, in my 25 years here, there were a few times where I would get a letter from somebody that I had dealt with. One time I got a personal visit from an individual that I had quite honestly, ridden very hard. I mean, I had kept him to task on many different things, and when he finally got clean from drugs and started figuring out which end was up and what he was going to do with his life, he came in the day that he got his papers from his probation officer saying he was no longer on probation. And he came in and said, "Tim, I just want to thank you for kicking my butt as a young kid and keeping me on task." And he said, I hated you for a long time because of that, but he said, I can't thank you enough for it. You know, and that, letters like that and people like that were few and far between. But I know, and the older I got and the more mature I got and the more I realized human nature, and I knew that I was still making a difference, and that's why I wanted to be a police officer. And even though you don't hear the praise and the thank you, and you don't expect it, but it's, you just know that it's there. And you know, and I have a few letters like that, that, and responses from people that that I would see out in public that would say, you know, "Man, you were really tough on me, and I hated your guts, and but I thank you for, you know," and because we both, all of us grow, hopefully grow and mature at some point in life, and what we believed was true at 18 years old and at 28 and 38 and 48, each year and each experience, hopefully, if we're doing it correctly, hopefully we're able to look at ourselves and honestly evaluate how everything went in the past and where we're at right now and where we're going in the future. And it, people say, they always say, "Well, you've changed," you know, and to whoever, you know, they, people say that a lot, you know, to somebody, "Man, you've really changed." And my response to that is, "Thank you. I sure hope I've changed, because if I was the same guy I was when I was 6 years old, you know, yes, we've changed." Mm-hmm. And it's, so I'm changing every day. And I'm, as I grow older, I really try to open myself up to being, look at myself honestly and evaluate each day and say, "Okay, well, this is a great day. How can I make it better? You know, how, what am I going to do?" And most of it's when you stop looking at yourself and saying, "Okay, how can I help Tim Agerbraten?" And Tim Agerbraten looks outward and says, "Well, how can Tim Agerbraten help the people that he's coming in contact with?" Then that's when things really start changing and moving and grooving. And it's so through the police work and then through my family life and music, and I do motivational speaking too, and I do, so all that kind of stuff, and it's exciting to see when people face challenges and how they adapt to their challenges. And you know, I know you don't want to talk about you, but I want to talk about you for a second. Just, you know, what you've done with this place and this podcast and everything, and how you're using your gifts, your creativity, and this sound booth that we're in. You folks, if you get a chance to come down here to Perham and check out this space, it's creative and it's unique and it's awesome. And so you're using your gifts to get the word out in an electronic format, and to inform people about lake life and about different aspects, and you're bringing that media to hopefully tens of millions of people.
Yeah, thank you.
So tell your friends about this podcast.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
We take a little break, and I would like to thank another supporter of this podcast, Jack Chivers Realty from Detroit Lakes. They know a place for you. If you are thinking to live in Lakes Country, finding a home, if you like to relocate in Lakes Country, if you're looking for a recreational home, please go to jackchiversrealty.com and seek out an expert from the Chivers. They love lake life as we do, and they know a place for you. Thank you. Now back to our interview with Tim Agerbraten.
But that was really fascinating and interesting. So 25 years of law enforcement, and you decided to leave that one successful career behind. I think, yeah, everybody would agree you reach chief.
Right.
And now you grab the energy that you have and the experience, and you entertain.
Yep.
You had. Tell us now about the singing cop.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is a nickname.
It was. Yeah.
It used to be. I saw you at Longbridge.
Yeah.
Or heard you, I guess, both.
Yeah.
And so tell us, you always made music. And you play the guitar, I know.
Yep.
You play how many instruments?
For my shows, I play the guitar and harmonica a little bit. And then
piano? Did you start with the piano? How did you start?
Yeah, I started like everybody else did, with a recorder, the flute thing. And,
oh, yeah.
And, and I've been singing literally all my life. I mean, I can't remember
really
a time when I didn't sing. And even at a very young age, I mean, like 3, 4, my parents would always tell me that I was whistling before I'd learn how to speak. And so I really think that, you know, everybody's got gifts, and there's people are wired differently. And you have a very creative mind. Lisa Jaskin Peterson has an amazing gift with looking at a piece of empty land and putting a house on that, you know. And my wife has an incredible gift of knowing what kind of gifts to buy for people. She's always thinking about other people, and so she's got that gift, you know. And so everybody's got their thing, and I've been wired with music. I mean, it literally, there's a song in my head all the time, and if something comes up, I start singing about it. And
You write also music?
A little bit. I've written songs. I make up a lot of songs in my shows. It just comes naturally, and it.
So you tell stories.
I tell stories. Yep.
And
so I'll see somebody walk in, and they maybe have a big cowboy hat on, and I'll put it right into the song I'm singing already, and I'll just start singing about their cowboy hat, and
really?
And it's fun to watch their reaction when they realize that I'm singing about them, and it's fun, and it's so I'll make rhymes and different things. I've written a few songs that I've recorded. And that's, I get a lot of satisfaction out of that. And most of my shows are cover music, songs
okay.
that other people have sung and made famous or not famous.
Yeah.
And so I've been singing all of my life. When I was in college, I started to play the guitar. And I was a resident assistant, RA at Morehead State. And so I would patrol the hallways in my dorm to make sure nobody was having parties and stuff. But I would do my rounds with my guitar because I was just learning how to play, and I just loved the reaction.
Did they respect you? Or you were just the...
Well, it's... Music breaks down so many barriers. Even if it's a song people don't like or a genre
uh-huh.
that people don't like, what I found as an RA is that when I had that guitar on, and I was learning, I wasn't a very good guitar player, and... but it would break down those barriers, and instantly people would start talking, you know, and we'd say, what kind of guitar is that? Or do you know how to play this song or whatever? And I would sit down in the dorm, like at the front main reception area, and just play my guitar with my guitar case open. And college kids don't have money, so they would throw me crackers and put bags of ketchup in my guitar case and a couple of pennies here and there, but it was a fun. I was known kind of as a singing RA, you know, and then it's always just been a hobby. And I when I moved to Detroit Lakes, I started singing in church with a group, and
okay,
and just always, you know, in college I sang in choir there, and so music has always been a way to vent, you know, and so like in police work, I
workout.
Yeah, it was my workout. Yep. So I relied heavily on music to get my frustrations out. When I was happy, the music would make me happier. When I was down, the music would make me happier,
mm-hmm.
and I could wail on it, you know, and just get a lot of emotions out. And it was, and then not only did it help me, but I realized that it was. People were affected by that, you know,
mm-hmm.
and people even walking by. And I've never really been what I would consider shy. And so I've always enjoyed that and enjoyed how music makes people feel. And then I think I was a sergeant on the police department, and we had a neighborhood block party just in our neighborhood, and we hired a one-man band, Dan Holt from Detroit Lakes, and Danny Holt, we hired him to come out and play music, and Danny was playing, and I'm a big Dan Holt fan. I just love Dan Holt. He's a great guy and one of my mentors, and I was watching Dan play, and I was thinking, man, I was looking at his equipment, and I thought, he's playing the same music I love to play. I love every genre of music. I really do, even rap and hip-hop, and I don't play that stuff, but I enjoy a mm-hmm. little bit of everything, and so Dan was playing, and I thought, man, I could do that, you know, and so I started buying some equipment, and one of the first shows I played was like an anniversary, 25th wedding anniversary for somebody, and it was fun, and I enjoyed it, but I was working nights and weekends as a police officer, so I was
interfered with the potential.
Yeah,
shows.
And I never really had an opportunity to do music, but it was just a hobby.
Uh-huh.
And then I became an investigator for the police department. That was my first Monday through Friday, 8 to 4 job.
Oh.
And then so my nights and weekends were a little more free, and so I started doing more music, and it was just all word of mouth. And I remember doing like 40 shows in a year, and I thought, man, this is great. You know, I did 40 shows.
That's a lot every week, almost.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. And then it kept growing. Then I was doing 80 shows a year, and then got to about 130 shows a year while I was still working full time. And so when I applied to be the chief of police, I was asked by somebody on the interview board that, you know, do you think that this would be a conflict of interest? And I said, boy, if it is, please let me know, and I will step down from being the chief of police, because I didn't know how it would be a conflict of interest, because when I was a sergeant and when I was playing my music, people would come up to me, and it was still breaking down those barriers where if I was in uniform, a lot of people wouldn't come up and talk to me because the uniform represents something to everybody, good, bad, or otherwise. But with the music, even people that didn't like police officers per se, they may like music, or they may say, man, that song you played reminded me of my high school, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. or my first date, or whatever. And it really broke down a lot of barriers. And the shows that I do are pretty much the same for, like, I do the family show a lot at for the Water Carnival. So where there's little kids, and I've done preschool and elementary, you know, fun dance, sing-along things. And that show is pretty much the same as Long Bridge, which is pretty much the same as I play a lot at assisted living facilities and nursing homes. And tomorrow, actually, I'll be at Oak Crossing in Detroit Lakes. And it's, the shows are pretty much the same. And I could see the concern if I was the chief of police, and if I was up on stage swearing and getting
being
angry with people,
example.
And being
a,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't, and it was fun. It was designed to be fun. It was designed to get people to enjoy it, and I just fell in love with that whole thing, and the song Brown Eyed Girl, for example, is a song that a lot of my artist musician friends hate, and they just refuse to play it. And I tell them, guys, it's not about you. You know, it's not about you as the musician. It's about your audience. And that's what I love about, for example, like I was playing at Chase on the Lake in Walker. And I play there in like a Friday and a Saturday night. And I was playing one night, and I do Brown Eyed Girl like I always do. And at the end of the night, I was packing my stuff up, and this guy approached me with a few of his adult kids, and he said, I got to thank you for playing Brown Eyed Girl. And I said, oh, you bet. I love that song. And he took out his smartphone and he showed me a picture of his wife, who had passed away about 7 years ago. And he said, we gather around this time every year with the kids and to remember their mother. And he showed me a picture of his wife, and he said that she had the most beautiful brown eyes, and this was her favorite song, Brown Eyed Girl. And it struck me that something that I love to do, you know, play music, and Brown Eyed Girl is a fun song, and people get involved with it and everything, but it reached that guy and his family on a completely different level. I never would have met them had it not been for that song and that entertainment thing. And the older I get and the more I do it, the more I realize that there's somebody out there listening within earshot. They might not even be at the venue. They might be hearing it down the street. And a song that I could be playing might completely turn their day around or bring them back to a memory of a loved one or a special time in their life. And that's a power that of a gift that I've been given, and I need to share that, and I love sharing it, and it's a win-win-win for everybody, and I love that power. I love it.
The more I hear and the more I understand, because I knew you, but I didn't know all those details about you. And I have quite a few artist friends. I used to be an art dealer, so I have a lot of friends who are artists by painting or photography or video, not singing really, but it's all about expression,
right.
And now that's why I also asked cover or writing, because if I was an artist, or how I understand artists, isn't it now the right moment or the chance, maybe because you have the time, you probably have momentum, and with your motivational ambition or job, I should say, also.
Yeah.
Isn't it the right time now to actually write your own poem, art, music, and then tell me even more instead of only covering?
Right.
Like, you understand?
Oh, yeah.
Because if you want to have an impact, and if you feel like how happy it is to touch me or this family that you just described,
yeah,
you could now potentially soon or whenever share your life experience in singing.
Right?
So do you work on an album, or like, is there something where you say like, yeah, you know, like in the next 5 years I do have a goal of, is that something that you work on, or
I have 3 albums right now that I've recorded, and so the last two that I did, there was one original song on each one, actually the first one and the third one that I did had an original song. But yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, and I've thought a lot about that. And so when I do a motivational presentation, I just did one a couple weeks ago, and down in the cities, and I incorporate music into that. And what I love to do is like for a conference that an organization is having, usually they have like a hospitality night where people are getting together and they're socializing. And so what I've done before, and what I really love to do, is to entertain that night, get to know some of the people on a social level, and then the next day deliver a keynote presentation. And that way it gives me some credibility, like, oh, that's the guy from last night that played whatever song. And then I will do music, and that's my goal, is to get more original stuff in there. And I want to adapt that music, like you said, with some real life experiences, and because everybody's got a story to tell. Everybody does. I don't care who you are. Each person has a story to tell, and each person's story would benefit somebody if somebody else heard it. But not everybody is comfortable with sharing their story. And not everybody's comfortable about standing in front of a group of strangers and really exposing themselves, their flaws and their what makes them tick, you know. And I am. So it's a natural progression for me to go from the music to the speaking, and then now marry the two together, and have, because the speaking part, I can reach a lot more people through that, using the same it's a motivating thing, and it's about our attitudes and our decisions that we make, and how we can take people. And that's the same thing when I'm in front of an audience of a couple hundred people and I'm talking. I know that there's a nugget that's going to stick with somebody. They may not remember my name 2 months later or 2 hours later, but I want them to leave with that feeling of empowerment. Something will click. Mm. I give them a little coin, and when I'm done, and they take this coin, and maybe 2 years later they'll see that coin, and they'll have no clue who I was, but they'll remember that they have a choice in their attitude, and they'll remember bits and pieces of my presentation. And that, to me, is so powerful also. And I totally agree with what you're saying about that music piece and sharing more of that
into your
original
art.
Stuff. Yep, exactly.
Music. Okay, so we may be hearing more.
Oh yeah, I hope so. That's the dream.
Yeah. When is your next public show in Detroit Lakes area? Spring or winter is a little.
Yeah, winter I'm busy, but it's mostly private parties. Yeah.
So are you going to be on Longbridge? Are you there every Thursday?
I'll be there this summer. If you go to my website, offdutychief.com.
Oh, really?
Offdutychief.com. And then it has my schedule on there, my music schedule and my speaking schedule. And,
cool.
And then I'll play at the Holiday Inn and the Longbridge. A bunch of different outside venues, and those are another one. Like when I'm playing at the Holiday Inn or at Longbridge or anywhere outside, and I'm playing music and I'm looking out at the water and I can hear the boats coming up and I can see people half a mile away on their pontoon, and I'll start singing about them and I'll see them waving their arms, it is so unbelievable. And that's one of those draws to Detroit Lakes that I think separates us from a lot of communities along Highway 10 or anywhere in Minnesota. It's just absolutely, and there's something here all year round, in this area, and even where we're at now in Perham. I mean, this, you talk about a little community that packs a punch. They are just moving and grooving in this town, and Otter Tail County and Becker County and this whole Lakes Country area is just there's a lot to be had, and you can see the draw that people that live in Fargo and work in Fargo and West Fargo, and that's a great community also, but they come here to visit,
to rejuvenate,
and we have a saying, my wife and I and our family and our friends, that, and we're not bragging, but we just say we live here.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and her friends have it on their stockings now. They gave stockings that said we live here in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, and we believe it, and it's true that when you come here, and it's just so, I mean, people drive up here from Nebraska to visit and to spend a week, and we're thinking, oh, we hate to see you leave on Sunday, but bye-bye, and we're not leaving on Sunday. We Sunday nights on the boat are like some of the best nights ever. There's a lot to be said about this community and this whole area, and it's incredible. So in the live music opportunities seem to be growing.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of is a pendulum on that, where several years ago it was pretty unique, and now more and more venues are offering that live entertainment, and just something about walking into a restaurant and whether it's a one person band playing a piano or a guitar and singing, or if it's a full band, and there's so many different opportunities, and there's some absolutely great like full country rock bands and stuff from our region that crush it. I mean, they're so good.
Yeah.
And they're fun and they're entertaining, and then like the Lodge on Lake Detroit has jazz trios that come in.
Yeah.
So we have a variety, and then the Historic Homes Theater, you start adding the shows in that they have, and that's everything from from country to classic rock stuff to theater presentations like musicals and plays. And man, I mean, it's just for a community our size, there is so much going on.
Perfect that we have now our Lake Life Weekend platform to communicate those events and have our event schedule.
Yep.
No, thank you very much. I think we almost reached an hour here of interview. That was a wonderful time.
This is part one of seven. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, maybe next time I get a little live snippet of you. Well, thank you very much for coming. That was very insightful, and we will communicate your shows in the future and probably see you at Long Ridge or wherever you perform. Thank you again for coming.
Danke schön.
Yeah, bitte, bitte. Danke. Danke Ihnen. You have a wonderful weekend ahead.
Yes, you too, Dirk. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.